Banker by family lineage, Jamie Dimon's grandfather fled Greece as a refugee and landed in New York in 1921. Changing his name from Papadimitriou to Dimon likely helped him secure a job as a restaurant busboy. Family tales suggest he got sacked from the restaurant and later found work at a Greek bank. Climbing up the ladder, he eventually became vice president before moving to Shearson Hamel, a brokerage firm. Jamie's dad, Ted, also joined the same firm. Jamie, born on March 13, 1956, grew up in Jackson Heights, Queens, until he was 11. Then, the family briefly tried suburban life, but quickly returned to the city. In school, Jamie excelled in sports and looked out for his twin brother. He was known for his strong ethics and didn't hesitate to challenge authority when he felt it was necessary. The Dimons became close with Sandy Weill when he acquired Shearson Hamel, where Ted worked. Jamie, while at Tufts University, impressed Weill with a paper he wrote about how Weill merged efficient and inefficient companies. Weill offered Jamie a summer job where he wasn't afraid to speak up, even if it meant disagreeing with his boss sometimes. After college, Dimon worked for a small consulting firm. He stood up for himself when he felt treated unfairly, and this experience made him see the dishonesty and bureaucracy in corporations. In 1980, he went to Harvard Business School, where he was a Democrat among Republicans and wore jeans in a crowd of preppy grad students. At Harvard, he met his future wife, fellow student Judy Kent, and graduated in 1982. The couple has three daughters, Julia, Kara, and Laura. Dimon says, until they were about 15, we never took a vacation without them. The kids would say I was around a lot, even though I thought I wasn't, because when I was there, I would be there. Sandy Viles, acquisition engine. Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, and Morgan Stanley offered Dimon jobs. He sought advice from Weill, a family friend and chair of the executive committee at American Express. Weill invited Dimon to join Amex. Later, political issues led to Viles' departure from his operating role. Dimon and Weill tried to buy Amex's struggling insurance unit, Fireman's Fund, with Warren Buffett's assistance, but the Amex board rejected the deal, leading to their resignations. Afterward, Dimon and Weill purchased Commercial Credit, a Baltimore-based consumer lender. Despite a lower return on equity compared to other finance firms, they saw opportunities to cut costs and take the company public successfully. Dimon moved to Baltimore, while the rest of the team commuted from New York. He closely monitored Commercial Credit's financial performance, correcting inaccuracies. Dimon also engaged in tough politics, pushing out his supervisor, Greg Fitzgerald. He even challenged Weill, engaging in competitive bets on train stops and sunrise times. Weill planned to make Commercial Credit an acquisition powerhouse, strengthening its financial position to buy struggling competitors. The 1987 stock market crash lowered commercial stock value, but it also made many financial stocks cheap, creating opportunities for buyers. Although Weill missed acquiring F. Hutton to Peter Cohen, he and Dimon succeeded in acquiring Primerica, a major financial company. The rise of Jamie Dimon. Soon after Drexel Burnham Lambert collapsed, causing a stir in the finance world, Primerica's stock climbed. Jamie Dimon, at the young age of 35, took over as its president, known for his sharp mind and business acumen. Unlike his colleague Sandy Weill, Dimon lacked humility and had no qualms about letting people go when necessary. He became the go-to person for layoffs. In 1992, Primerica made a significant investment in Travelers Corporation, an insurance company struggling due to poor real estate ventures and the aftermath of Hurricane Andrew's devastation in South Florida. In 1993, Weill and Dimon made a bold move by acquiring the Shearson brokerage, essentially stripping it away from Shearson Lehman. They joined forces with Primerica's Smith Barney brokerage. Dimon wasn't thrilled when Weill brought in high-spending managers who, in Dimon's view, drove up costs without delivering enough value. Conflict with boss's daughter. The press focused more on Dimon, causing his already strained bond with Weill to worsen. Weill was jealous of Dimon's reputation and became angry when people said Dimon was really running Travelers. Weill also began to suspect that Dimon was keeping information from him. Dimon had always been unafraid to challenge authority, which made his relationship with Weill combative for years. Will later complained in his memoir that Dimon began to see himself as my equal. In 1996, Dimon clashed with Will and his daughter, Jessica Bibliowicz. Bibliowicz joined Smith Barney as executive VP in 1994 and became head of mutual fund sales in 1995. Dimon wanted the firm to sell note-load mutual funds, but Bibliowicz and Will disagreed. Despite public assumptions that Dimon was Weil's heir, their relationship was badly torn. Will later told the press, "I have never made it clear to anybody that Jamie is my successor." Salomon Brothers, Citicorp, and Long Term Capital Management were financial institutions. Salomon Brothers was a top Wall Street firm until a bond trading scandal required Warren Buffett's rescue in 1991. In 1997, Buffett's chosen manager, Derek Maughan, asked Will to buy Salomon. Buffett had never planned to keep it long. Salomon faced potential problems like heavy investment in derivatives and a questionable internal culture. Nonetheless, Travelers bought Salomon in 1997. Will made Maughan co-CEO with Dimon, who was upset. Shortly after, the Asian financial crisis began. Later that year, Will and Dimon, despite their differences, planned to buy Citicorp. Its CEO, John Reed, saw the financial industry consolidating and agreed to a deal with Will. Dimon called it the mother of all deals, but to his surprise, Will refused to give him a seat on Citicorp's board. Will appeared to be pushing Dimon out. Meanwhile, Salomon's trading unit continued losing money. Dimon closed it down, which helped destabilize the markets and led to the collapse of Long Term Capital Management, LTCM, a large hedge fund founded by Salomon alumni. The LTCM crisis nearly caused a global financial collapse. Travelers Citicorp merger drama. The Travelers Citicorp merger was approved by regulators, but tensions between Dimon and Maughan grew, leading to Dimon's dismissal by Reed and Will. Dimon was shocked but handled his departure graciously, despite feeling devastated. His wife, Judy Dimon, was upset by how he was treated. Dimon cooperated with presenting his departure as a mutual agreement, although Will later blamed their relationship breakdown on Dimon's desire to replace him. Critics viewed Dimon as self-centered and quick-tempered, but his defenders believed he was unfairly treated by Will, who expected Dimon to do the hard work while others took credit. Dimon admitted to being aggravating, acknowledging that he had caused friction with Will. After leaving with a $30 million severance package, Citicorp's stock declined, and other top executives left the bank. Despite receiving numerous job offers, Dimon, then 42, waited almost a year and a half before accepting a new position, Bank One. Bank One, led by John McCoy, was formed through a series of deals that brought together regional banks into a decentralized entity with different cultures and systems. Its first USA credit card subsidiary was known for poor service and had the most customer complaints in the industry. First Chicago NBD was created from a merger that hadn't fully integrated before becoming part of Bank One. McCoy, who orchestrated this complex merger, allowed the acquired bank's managers to continue running their companies as they saw fit, which made operational improvements difficult. Interestingly, when McCoy was ousted, he suggested Dimon as a possible replacement. Dimon negotiated a favorable deal that gave him both the chairman and CEO roles. He sought advice from McCoy's father, John, who had led the bank for many years. Dimon streamlined the board and concentrated his authority, recruiting top talent from Citigroup despite restrictions in his severance agreement. He offered them short-term contracts and lower salaries, but the potential for Bank One's growth made it attractive. He also made tough decisions with shareholders, like cutting dividends. Dimon focused on the details of banking rather than large acquisitions or financial engineering. He reduced staff by 12,000, introduced branch-level financial reporting, and emphasized incentive pay. He demanded quick action, eliminated consultants, stopped outsourcing information systems, and removed unprofitable customers from the corporate loan portfolio. Despite challenges like the internet bubble burst and the aftermath of September 11, 2001, Bank One remained profitable under Dimon's leadership. J.P. Morgan Chase. In 2003, J.P. Morgan Chase's CEO, William B. Harrison Jr., sought a successor and proposed to Jamie Dimon that the bank buy Bank One. The deal was completed in 2004, and Harrison stepped down gracefully. Dimon, now CEO of the merged banks, approached his new role with the same careful, detail-focused management style. He decided to avoid the mortgage securitization market, despite initially wanting to expand in it. Recognizing the risks, by 2006, he sold $12 billion in subprime mortgages the bank had issued. This decision steered the bank clear of the looming subprime crisis. Even though analysts criticized it, the market's subsequent downturn proved Dimon's foresight. In 2007, J.P. Morgan Chase faced substantial losses due to home equity loans, totaling $564 million, prompting them to boost reserves by $1 billion. In March 2008, Dimon took center stage in rescuing the financial system. He orchestrated the purchase of Bear Stearns, teetering on the brink of collapse, after intense 48-hour negotiations backed by government support. Later in August, when Lehman Brothers faced a similar fate, Dimon and other major banks, including Citibank and Bank of America, examined the situation closely. However, despite efforts to find a solution, no one stepped in to save Lehman. Dimon and his team urged Lehman's leaders to explore emergency options like an industry bailout or government aid, but these attempts failed. Lehman's downfall sent shockwaves through the markets, leading to a plunge. Throughout the crisis, Dimon played a crucial role behind the scenes, guiding J.P. Morgan Chase's response. Despite suffering significant losses, totaling $18.8 billion, the bank fared better than many others. Even when the economy took a hit and businesses struggled, Dimon's bank faced its own challenges but managed to recover and push forward. Like other banks, it got some help from the government to bounce back, but it didn't stop there. Instead, it gained more customers and started buying up promising opportunities again. Dimon believes they'll keep succeeding because they've built a solid company over time, not just because a competitor messes up. He values maintaining self-respect throughout it all. Key points. 1. Jamie Dimon's family lineage includes a grandfather who came to New York as a refugee and eventually became a banker, while his father also worked in finance. 2. Dimon impressed Sandy Weill with a paper in college and later joined him at American Express, where he rose through the ranks. 3. Dimon and Weill's acquisitions included Commercial Credit and Primerica, aiming to strengthen their financial positions. 4. Conflict arose between Dimon and Weill, leading to Dimon's dismissal after the Travelers Citicorp merger. 5. Dimon then led Bank One, focusing on operational improvements and steering clear of risky financial practices. 6. J.P. Morgan Chase acquired Bank One, making Dimon its CEO and leading the bank through the 2008 financial crisis with strategic decisions. 7. Despite facing challenges, J.P. Morgan Chase, under Dimon's leadership, recovered and continued to grow, emphasizing solid company-building practices.